Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 44 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan. How are you?
I'm good.
Awesome.
Although we're recording this and it is a beautiful sunny day by the looks of it, but the weather today, or the temperatures, dropped again. So
did you get snow? I know some.
We got some flurries.
Okay. My sister lives in Denver and they had like a legit blizzard. Like,
geez. Yeah, they had that a little further north in Michigan too. I just think it's so funny how often we start talking about the weather, but it's just the easiest thing to talk about. It is a thing.
Now it's our thing. Well, happy spring. It is spring.
It is officially spring now, and I am looking forward to summer a whole lot. I don't want to skip over spring, but we've had some weird springs the last few years. It hasn't really felt like much of a spring. It's just kind of cold and mucky, and then all of a sudden it's summer. So
I didn't like spring when I lived in Chicago. I felt very, like, winter, it felt like you knew you were just in for it. And
yes.
Then I just always felt like March and April were so temperamental, which is typical of spring, but also I was so over the cold that I would get more mad at cold and snow.
Absolutely.
In March and April than I did in the winter, because it just felt
I become very obsessive about the weather at this time of year, you know, March and April. Like, I can't stop checking the weather app to see if there's been any change since a few hours ago. Like, maybe, maybe they thought it was only going to be 35, but it's actually going to be 50. I mean, I get really weird. So anyway, let's talk about what we're really talking about. Today we are talking about mom superpowers and mom kryptonite.
I love it.
So we're going to be talking about the things that we're great at and the things that we're either terrible at or just don't handle well as moms. And I have a feeling, Sarah, you and I are going to have like some opposites.
I think we have some opposites. I know, I love at least one though that we share, which I feel like is going to be funny. But yeah. This is going to be really fun. And I feel like what's funny about this topic is I feel like a lot of the things we'll talk about, we've touched on in other episodes. So listeners who've gotten to know our quirky personalities will probably be like, yeah, I totally knew that about you. But we've never put it in these terms. And I think it's a fun thing to think about, because all moms are blessed with some things that just, like, they kind of do naturally really well, and then other things that are really hard. And I think if we compare notes, it's actually kind of cool that nobody's the same. We can fill in for each other.
Absolutely. So you had a little bit of housekeeping or something.
A little bit. Yeah. I just wanted to just acknowledge for the record that we skipped a week last week, which we've only done. We're coming up on a 1 year of doing this show. We started out as thinking this show would be every other week. And then literally like 2 episodes in, I think we were like, well, this is too much fun. Let's do it every week. So we did.
Yeah.
And I think we took 1 week off in the summer, toward the end of summer, and one over Christmas. So this was our spring break. It was actually not either of our kids' school spring breaks, but we just
declared it for ourselves.
And we were trying to squeeze too much in, and we're pretty good, like, changing up our recording schedule when we need to. And both of us will like move things around, but I think it had happened like 3 weeks in a row and we were like, let's just, anyway, the point is, listeners on Facebook, we kind of put something out there and people were so nice. They were like, you deserve a break. And it was very sweet. So if you missed us last week, we're sorry. And we're back. And we did get one email from a listener who was like, I've been binge listening and I'm finally caught up. So now I can't wait for new episodes every week. And I wrote back.
And that was like the day the new one was supposed to come out, I think.
So I was like FYI. You have to wait 2 weeks. Sorry. But anyway, just thanks everybody for giving us our own little spring break, because we just got really behind
Sarah? I'm proud of us, because we only sent back and forth like 4 or 5 waffling texts before we finally both just threw the towel in. It was kind of like, ugh, this isn't going to work. What about this day? What about this day? And then I think you said, well, we could also just take a break.
I know.
And I was like, oh, we can? Okay, let's do that. It reminds me of my friends Whitney and Heather at Ricky Moms. One time posted something about there are no blogging emergencies back when, we were trying to blog every single day or, most days of the week. And I remember reading that there are no blogging emergencies. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no podcasting emergency. So
yeah, nobody is docking our pay or us for not showing up 1 week.
Exactly. We like consistency. We like consistency, but every now and then it's nice to just say, you know what? Not this week.
Hey, even Serial. I don't think you listen to Serial, but I am like making my way through season two half-heartedly. But even Serial, which is like one of the most popular podcasts, like midway through was like, yeah, we're not doing it every week anymore. We have too much to cover. Yeah. We're going to go to every other week. So if they can
There's
do
no
it.
Rules. Exactly. And that's what the archives are good for. It's always a good chance to dig into the archives. Yeah, so.
Absolutely. All right. Superpowers. That's all I had on housekeeping. I don't think.
No, I don't have anything else. No.
So set us up here. What is a mom superpower?
So I feel like, and this is funny because we had this whole conversation before we started recording, because I swear I at one point wrote a post somewhere about mom superpowers and mom kryptonite, and I now cannot find it. Like it doesn't exist online. So either I must have written it for another website that took it down or something. I can't find it. But anyway, to me, what it means is like my superpowers are the things that I'm uniquely great at and that have to do with motherhood or parenting. And my kryptonite is either the thing I'm not good at or the thing that makes my job harder, kind of makes me fall apart a little bit. So
and especially when it comes naturally or does not come naturally, like you haven't, some things we just get better at with practice, but there's other things that just, especially when you notice there may be harder struggle for other people and it's just for whatever reason, it just kind of comes naturally to you. I think that's a good definition of a superpower.
Absolutely.
And there's lots in the middle. There's lots of things that we get better at with practice, you know, and we're varying degrees of successful at.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, one person's superpower might be not something another person would even want as a superpower. So I'll start with one of mine.
Yeah.
And it is like, I'm really good at dealing with chaos. I was even better at that when my kids were really little. Like I could be sitting in the middle of a room and there would just be like kids everywhere, stuff everywhere, you know, noise, like running around, all this stuff going on. I didn't ever mind having like lots of kids in the house at once. I didn't mind if a nap got blown or a bedtime or whatever. Like that stuff just never really bothered me. And to me, that helped me deal with the fact that I had lots of small children under one roof and it fit my personality. But for you, maybe being able to deal with chaos well wouldn't even be a superpower because you don't like it. You know what I mean?
And do you feel like you were always that way? Like, do you remember a time before motherhood where you sort of like thrived or didn't mind chaos? Or do you feel like it was uniquely a motherhood thing?
I think I'm very adaptable.
Okay.
So I think if I like live with people who, or, you know, I'm just thinking of college, for example, if I live with people who are really neat and structured, I can kind of adapt my life to be that way. And if I live with someone who's like a slob and is never on time, I'm kind of like, whatever. And then I sort of would become that way too. Like I was very adaptable. Right. So I think now my life is infinitely more structured and neat and tidy and quiet than it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago. But I don't feel any I'm probably calmer in a lot of ways now than I was, but that's also because my kids are older and my life is different.
Right.
But I think I was just pretty, I think the adaptability was really maybe the superpower there, you know, the ability to just whatever kind of was thrown at me.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I would kind of swing and duck and roll or whatever.
I think it's a great superpower. And I think the ability to be okay in the midst of chaos is like a huge gift that I wish I had a little tablespoon of. I mean, I obviously have adapted myself to like deal with chaos because I have three children and I had three children who were under five when I had the third one. So it's been a chaotic few years, but it is not a natural superpower of mine at all. And it's an ongoing negotiation with how much chaos, you know, can I allow to keep things fun and spontaneous and not like a control freak, but also where do I draw the line for my own like mental health? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's an excellent superpower.
I was just going to say too, like, as you were just talking, I was thinking about one of the things I put as my kryptonite, which is a silly little thing. And it's like when one kid is just making noise just for the sake of making noise, that drives me nuts.
So I was hoping we could have an extended discussion about this because this is the one I was thinking of that is a kryptonite for both of us. But I want to discuss in detail the kind of noises that you're talking about.
Okay. Well, I just want to say really quickly though that it's funny that I would isolate that as a kryptonite
Yeah.
But yet I could sit in a room full of like six kids pounding on each other and being loud. Right. I think it's also what I'm realizing is I think it's also the expectation you're setting up. So I'll give you an example of what has been driving me crazy lately. Clara is a chatterbox. She's a lot like I was at her age. She just likes the sound of her own voice, and she gets lonely. So she just basically entertains herself, but like just talks to herself all the time. Right. And so it'll be in a situation where I think it would be reasonable for everyone to just freaking be quiet. Like, you know, like I'm sitting at the dining room table reading a magazine, you know, there's no playing really going on. Right. There's no reason. No one's excited. No one's
everyone is
around.
Ages seven and up. Just for, everyone is to ages paint the seven and up. Like, it's yes. not like you have three.
There's really no
yourself.
Reason for her just to be talking to herself and just saying nonsense words like over and over, you know, like rhyming and then and having like this conversation where she's answering herself in this kind of high pitched voice. I mean, I won't even notice for a while. Like, it'll just kind of be like background noise. And I'll notice that my shoulders are doing thing where they, you know, where the shoulders start kind of like cringing up by your ears.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I'm like, oh my gosh, Clara, could you please, honey, I know you really like to make noise. Could you just do that someplace else? And she's like, oh my gosh, mom, I'm just blah, blah, blah. And it's just more of it. It's just never, more it and stops. More. And it never stops.
So funny.
So tell me about yours.
Well, my kids, both my older kids right now, but especially Allegra, who's almost eight, make mouth noises, like nonsensical mouth noises, like clicking, or like Allegra has like a duck sound right now. You know when kids just randomly like play with like blow bubbles or make zerbit noises, or I mean, I feel like I even kind of remember doing that. It's like boredom and I don't know. But Allegra is like a one man band of mouth noises. Like, she has like clicking and makes her sound like she needs professional help. I don't think that's the case. She just is like a noisemaker. And so that's the same thing with me. And then Reed is the talker. So he would be the one more like Clara, talking or singing at all times. And also just little things like just any kind of repetitive noise, like kicking the leg of your chair over and over again, like anything where you're like, oh my gosh, stop making noise. Stop. But I was curious if you had any like bubble blowing mouth noise.
I mean, there's just constant noise.
Like, I think that's like an actual phase. Or actually, I would say a kryptonite of mine is any small annoying habits, which if you have children, there are many small annoying habits. And I am like not a good don't sweat the small stuff with those. Like, one example is Violet started biting her nails when she was like two, like a really young nail biter. It's not like she was like stressed about the state of the world or anything, but just got like a nail biting habit, and her nails were, and then it would hurt her. I mean, she'd bite them down. So we were trying to just get her to stop. And actually she has completely stopped now. It was a short phase, but things like that, like once there's a habit that I feel like is either, you know, not appropriate or not attractive, whether it's picking their nose or biting their nails or sticking their tongue out for no reason. But I tend to fixate. So I'm going to lump that in with unnecessary noises is also just like little annoying habits are not, I don't do well with that. Like instead of just letting it go or asking them to stop and then letting it go, I'm like, stop doing that. I don't know.
That's funny because those don't bother me as much as long as they don't invade my personal space in any way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that would only bother me if it somehow involved me.
Right.
So, you know, I probably wouldn't even notice otherwise. Not to say I never see my kids picking their nose or doing any gross things. And I will say one of my kids, and I won't name which kid because I mean, I don't want this on the internet about them, bites his toenails and has since he was like a year old.
Yeah.
And there's nothing I can do. I mean, I've tried.
Yeah.
And I always wondered why. Like, it took me a while to figure it out. I was like, why do his toenails never need to be clipped ever? Yeah. Like, all the other kids, you know, had, like, my kids' nails grow super fast. So, like, half the time they've got those talons, and then I have to, like, take a, you know, some kind of a saw to them. but one of my children, who shall remain nameless, never had that issue. And finally, one day I walked in and he was watching TV with his foot in his mouth. And at this point, he was way too old. I mean, I was horrified, but what are you going to do? I mean, I can't really break him of it now. So
I love that. Well, Violet actually did also bite her. When she was in her heavy nail biting phase, she would be in the car seat biting her toenails. And I couldn't stop because I was driving, you know, so like safely. Yes. I'm like, oh my gosh, please stop. And then she'd try and bite my nails. She ran out of nails. She'd bite her toenails. And then I'd be holding her hand, or she'd be in my arms, or I'd sit in my lap. And all of a sudden I'm like, wait, why is my hand in your mouth?
Oh my gosh. Did any of your kids have like any sensory things where they liked to touch certain things? So I'll give you an example. My sister-in-law's daughter my sister-in-law had like a big mole like on her stomach.
Oh yeah.
And when one of her daughters was nursing when she was really little, she would just kind of like tap the mole. And Jenna finally just got used to it. You know, it drove her crazy, but she finally just got used to it. Well, anytime then I would have this niece over, you know, and I'd be like cuddling with her. She'd like reach under my shirt and start looking for a mole. And I didn't have any. I'd be like, get snap. Because she would start picking, like just picking. And I'm sure my kids had, that's the one that popped into my head. I'm sure my kids had similar.
Yeah. Or some habits. Kids like to twirl hair, like their own or their parents.
Yeah.
Actually one of my little cousins, when she was little, stuck, same thing. She was used to having her hand up her mom's shirt when she nursed, but then if any other caregiver, she put her arm, her whole arm up their shirt.
Yeah.
Oh,
one of my kids, and I can't remember now which one it was, used to put his hand down my bra.
Yeah.
Which was really, was kind of sweet. Like he didn't, he wasn't like a twiddler, you know, so it was okay. But then I realized at one point, like we can't be walking around the store with his hand down my bra. We're too old for this. This is not going to work. So, yeah.
Well, I feel like that all just veered, but that's actually a really important topic, is annoying habits, because I find that the older my kids get, the more annoying habits they have. It's like larger behavior issues calm down. You know, they whine less. There's fewer tantrums. But, man, like that is not I don't do well with annoying habits. And if you ever just want to have like a one person performance art installation of all the noises you could possibly make with your mouth, I volunteer my 7-year-old, because it's it is impressive. Like, oh my gosh, stop.
She's like Dick Van Dyke or something.
Yeah.
So I wanted to backtrack really quickly, because while we were talking about annoying noises, annoying habits, isn't it funny? Like, we can get back to superpowers at some point, right? But like right now, it's fine. Let's just dive into all the stuff that makes us crazy. One thing that really makes me crazy that's kind of in the same genre is like kids trying to get your attention with some kind of annoying repetitive behavior. So, for example, my son Owen, and he's getting better at this. He's 10 now. But he would do this thing where if he wanted my attention and I was busy doing something, he would like headbutt me and say mom at the same time, like in rhythm. It was like mom. And I'd feel his forehead like hit me in the side or in the ribs. Mom, 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 mom. And I would ignore it, because I didn't want to reward that behavior. Right. And it wasn't like I wasn't giving him attention. I mean, there were ways for him to ask me something, but this was usually when he was annoyed because I told him no, or I wasn't doing something as quickly as he wanted me to, something like that. And it would be like one of those where I'd try to ignore it, and then I'd grit my teeth, and then suddenly I was like, oh my God, would you knock it off? You know, because it's just, it's crazy, and it's crazy making. It reminds me of, have you seen the clip from the Family Guy, that cartoon where Stewie, the little baby, is like, mommy, 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 mom.
No, I can picture it, mom, though. I mean, mommy, I've seen mom, other mommy. Family Guy.
We should put that, if we can find it, we should put it in the show notes, because it's exactly it. He's just like, mommy, mommy, mom, mom, mommy. And that goes to me hand in hand with whining.
Yeah.
Which is a different kind of behavior, but it's again like wanting something and then trying to like manipulate you to get it using a really annoying pitch of their voice.
Right.
I mean,
And whining is definitely one of those
expression I'm making right now.
That's a like super bad habit. Meaning I think sometimes kids whine when they're not even feeling particularly whiny. They've just literally forgotten how to talk in any other way. I mean, I think 3 and 4 year olds, that's a pretty prime, like, you know, they have all the words, they have a little bit more self-control, but they just, it becomes like a complete habit. And that's brutal.
Well, that goes hand in hand with baby talk. And you and I have both talked about how much baby talk makes us nuts.
Yeah.
You know, like, mommy.
Yeah.
Would you
I have no.
And like, you're 7. Pull yourself together.
No.
So how do you deal with that? For me, one of my things has been when kids kind of default to that manner of communicating that does not serve my mental health well, I will just say, I can't hear you when you talk that way. Or I can't. You know, my brain doesn't hear that. Sorry. You'll have to try again.
I think I have a very similar response. Like I just will say, you may ask me the same thing, but please use a different tone of voice. Like I can't respond to that. Or So I think I'm the same way. Shut it down. I remember when my kids were really little, or like when I had really little whiners, who it was just super persistent. I used to get kind of cute and say, okay, give me the whiny voice, get them all out and let them like whine and whine, yeah, and whine and whine and whine, and then pretend to like put it in my hands and throw it in the garbage or throw it out the window.
Oh,
and then
that's
later,
cute.
This
oh,
is when
clever.
They were like three, you know, like little and like to pretend and stuff. And if I was, yeah, having a good mom day, maybe. But then that's kind of cute because then they'd say, then they would come back and I'd be like, oh, nope, sorry, we threw that away. Remember, yeah, we don't have that voice anymore. We threw it across the street, put it in the dumpster.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
we have to acknowledge too that like a 7 or a 5 or a 3 year old's whines even are nothing compared to like the pre-verbal baby,
yes,
whine.
Oh, yeah.
The baby who toddler who isn't quite,
yeah,
isn't really verbal yet, but
yeah,
wants to communicate and can't,
yeah,
and is just like,
yeah,
you know, that grunting,
yeah,
whine. Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
and when they do it, when they come up behind you and,
yeah,
like wrap their arms around your knees,
yeah,
and like hold on to your legs and whine.
So pretty much
I loved that. That was
toddlers.
Great.
No.
Everything?
Yeah. Annoying.
Kryptonite's just all of it.
I will say, though, but going back to like the annoying habits or like repetitive noises, I do think there's some value in deciding what to just ignore, because there's certain,
that's true,
like with like the clicking or the what else? Like the yeah,
popping,
little like noises that aren't actually harming me. It's not like,
right,
with whining, I feel like I do want to give them better ways to communicate, and that's part of my job. But if they want to click their tongue or blow spit bubbles and it's not in my face, like you said,
right,
I do sometimes just sort of like tell myself to just, I can walk away or I can just ignore,
right,
it, but I don't have to be like, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it.
Stop it, stop it, stop it. Well, and Sarah, I will say, and this just reminded me of this, I think one of your superpowers, something I think you're way better at than me, is creatively kind of like your little example about throwing away the wines. I don't think that would have ever occurred to me. I think I would just tolerate until I couldn't take it anymore. And then be like, just knock it off. You have a lot of those kind of, you know, things that you've talked about where, and I know this is another superpower we're going to get into, like dealing with kids' emotional issues.
Yeah.
And I think some of the strategies that you've kind of come up with, that seems to be a natural strength of yours. Like,
yeah,
kind of,
I think
with
those,
so things.
I think I got that, I think, from my mom and from being around other like kind of people who are into that kind of parenting, or I definitely don't feel like I tried. So it either is natural or I was just exposed to it in a way that made
you
it feel,
yeah,
natural. But yeah. So, okay. Well, should we shift gears? I have another superpower for me. That's,
sure,
a little different
it.
Topic, and that is public tantrums. So and this is kind of going into what we were going to talk about, which is dealing with emotional outbursts, but specifically public tantrums or public meltdowns or public, even just public whining, mm-hmm, in the checkout line, which I know is such a common source of stress. And it's not that I'm perfect at it or that I handle it right every time, but it doesn't really raise my blood pressure. Like I almost,
yeah,
I feel for people that feel that way. So I'm not at all saying like I'm somehow more highly evolved as a parent, but it just,
right,
doesn't ratchet up my stress level any more than a tantrum would at home, or any more than like a clicking noise in my ear. For whatever reason, it,
right,
just, I'm kind of able to deal and not, I don't have that public parenting, like self-consciousness. There's other times,
yeah,
when I've felt public parenting self-consciousness, but not with public tantrums. So that's one that I do feel like, and I've always felt that way. My kids haven't been,
yeah,
the biggest, worst public tantrum throwers, I guess. So maybe that's part of it, but they've definitely done their share. And that's one that I just kind of,
yeah,
feel like I just roll with it. And I feel like people will either be sympathetic and empathetic, or they won't, and I won't have to see them again. So I just, one. We're talking about things that are some stressful for other people, but for some reason,
yeah,
not for us. That's one of them.
I think for me, like that was something where I'm not naturally one way or the other. I think that was really hard for me for my oldest two, especially because,
yeah,
my second one was, you know, a hellion for like 2 years. But I just got better at not giving a crap with the older,
right,
kids or with the younger kids.
Right.
So I got much calmer and much more,
right,
able to just kind of, you know, deflate. I also stopped putting myself in as many situations where that was happening. So that's,
yeah,
another thing I think.
Yeah.
I think that I just got kind of wise about not, you know, we've talked about this before, about how to kind of get in front of,
yes,
the tantrum or proactively,
yeah,
not be in a situation where it could, you know, it's going to even happen. I've gotten pretty good at, like, you know, and it's almost too late now because my kids aren't tantruming in public or, you know, throwing fits in public anymore.
Right.
But I did get toward the end of that phase really good at just dealing with things in the moment as they were happening and not feeling that pressure from right. outside. But right. one thing I will say, when you know you're talking about emotional situations, and this is one that I brought up as a kryptonite of mine, is I have a really hard time with kids, and what I don't like when they're too much. Okay, here's an example. Clara is so much like me as a kid. I have a really hard time dealing with how much like me she mm-hmm. is. And mm-hmm. in part of that is that she's very emotional. Mm-hmm. She's also got a lot of anxiety. I don't think I had as much anxiety. She's just got a ton of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I have a really hard time not being dismissive. Mm-hmm. You know, when she'll say things mm-hmm. like she's worried about X, Y, and Z, or she's crying about something mm-hmm. because she thinks I don't like her snuggles or whatever. I mean, whatever uh-huh. it is she's crying about. And I'm looking at her, and part of me is I just see myself in her, and yeah. I'm like, just get over it. Yeah. Step out yeah. of it. And I have a really tough time with that. Like, this has become like an issue. I think now John, who is like very unemotional in a lot of mm-hmm. ways and just very logical, he doesn't really – he'll just give her a hug. I think he's learned how to deal with Clara by mm-hmm. dealing with me. So, I haven't learned how to deal with myself yet. Maybe that's it. I mean, it's just – we're kind of just like at a little bit – and I remember this the same thing. Jacob was the same way at her mm-hmm. age. You know, he'd come home all upset about something that happened at school, and he'd tell me the story. And I'm thinking – you know, I didn't say this out loud, but I'm right. thinking, well, that's dumb. Right. Like, why are you upset about that? That's dumb. And, of course, you know, trying to put myself in his shoes but really having a hard time –
yeah.
Really, truly being empathetic because it feels like he's blowing something up
right.
that wasn't really a thing.
Right.
So it's kind of like that drama, you know, yeah. I'm uncomfortable with it.
Yes, and I could see then that.
And therefore, I don't deal well with it. And I know that's something that you're probably better at because you've said, you know,
yeah.
you're really good at talking kids through
yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah, I feel like in my element when I can help kids manage emotions. So I don't, yeah, I guess that's a superpower, or it's just, it's not something that feels difficult to me. Now, that's like all that to say, I don't love it. I mean, Reed is my most emotional and still gets wound up. But when he was like 3 and 4, he still gets wound up about when things get thrown away or saying goodbye to anything. Yeah. He has like a real problem with like anything that has to get thrown away or is broken or used up. So like, you know, the classic, like your kid finds a piece of art that they drew in the trash can. Like yeah. we've all been there, but like for him, that is like on a scale of 1 to 10, it's like a 15. And with every little thing, like he used to not be able to throw away like his sandwich crusts, even when he was done with the sandwich. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So talk about things that seem overblown. Like how can you possibly be upset about this. But I do feel like that is a superpower for me, that I can at least acknowledge, I don't have to like agree with the logic behind the upset, right. but I can empathize with the feeling. And actually even more in the last year or so with him, as I think I've gotten better at understanding what is really an anxiety for him and what feels like, it feels like the world is ending, even though like logically we know it isn't. And I think that's how adult anxiety works too. So I think yeah. just knowing, just separate, being able to separate that, like their feelings are real, even mm-hmm. if the circumstance is completely absurd. And I probably just got really right. good at that, having a lot of conversations about like why it was okay that this balloon that we got at a birthday party a week ago is now out of air and it's now, that's okay. Then we can just throw it away. Like things like that. We're like yeah. part of like 50 times a day, especially with him. So, yeah, I kind of enjoy that actually, like helping kids manage emotions is something I enjoy in a way, even though it's kind of
yeah
absurd.
Yeah. You know, while you're talking, I was thinking about patience and how many different kinds of patients
so true
there are, and some of the things that, like, for example, you know, John has pointed out to me before times when Claire and I are reading together or I'm trying to explain a story to her or explain something like more not intellectual necessarily mm-hmm. but just a little more cerebral, I yeah. can be very, very patient with that kind of thing mm-hmm. but she doesn't even let me brush her hair anymore because right. I'm so impatient to yeah. get those snarls yeah. out. And John will sit there and just work on a snarl forever. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my gosh, just yank it real quick. Yeah. Just get this over with. And so it's like different kinds of things yes. that you can be patient with. And I'm wondering how much that also, like if I really stood back and thought about it, how much that would also apply to my real life. I mean, yeah. or my, not my real life, but my life right. outside of motherhood, you mm-hmm. know, I'm not real patient with things that need to be untangled or yeah. taken apart and put back together and that kind of like that physical thing.
Yeah.
But I'll sit there and think, you know, right. I can be very patient with something more talky or thinky.
Right.
So
no, that's really, one of my favorite posts that you wrote on your more like personal business blog was about untangling the necklace. Like, that.
Oh yeah, yeah,
remember
yeah.
that one? So we should link to yes. that because that's good. Well, if you think about it, some of these superpowers in kryptonite really come down to what we feel we can handle in the moment without like mm-hmm. stress, fear, anxiety versus what feels stressful, scary, anxious, right? I mean, that's really like,
right.
that's so interesting. I agree. I mean, I am really quite patient with emotions, which is why tantrums and meltdowns, it's not that I love them, but I feel pretty confident in the midst of them. And I don't,
yeah,
you know, they don't usually ratchet up my own like blood pressure, but things like letting a kid get themselves dressed or tie their own shoes when I'm sitting there and it's time to go, I'm like, okay, yeah. okay, let's go. Or hairbrushing, you know, anything
yeah.
like that is not, I'm oh. not patient, or homework, or, you know, anything yeah, that I feel out. Like falls under the efficiency category. Cause I like efficiency and I,
cause you just want to get, you put those yeah. things in that bucket. Yeah. Like these are things we just get done so we can move on with the things right. that we like.
Yes.
And so like shoe tying is a perfect example. And I'm right. almost embarrassed to say how late my kids learned how to tie their shoes because I just really wanted them to just figure it out. I didn't, right. I mean, I would sit down with them all, you know, very dutifully starting at like 6 and we'd sit there and work on it for 15 minutes. And then I wanted to strangle somebody. And I remember learning how hard it was for me to even learn. I guess I'm not really spatially aware. And I don't have yeah. great hand-eye coordination in that way, hand-eye. So I guess it makes sense that that would be a parenting kryptonite for me to try right. to teach something that right. was torture for me to learn.
Especially when it's a physical or coordination. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so yeah, funny. Yeah. Well, I have one more of each. I don't know where you are, if you've been keeping track, but
I haven't really been keeping track, but just talk and I'm sure I'll
yes.
spark something.
So I have a superpower that comes back to this idea of efficiency, and that is getting out the door on time is a superpower of mine. And it is
mine
one I know
too.
That is hard for people. I wrote a post about it actually a few years ago that we can link to with some tips. But I like to be on time, and you always hear like the more kids you have and the more chaotic, like always running late. And I have zero judgment for people who are running late because it's my on timeness is not attached to anybody else's. And I know it is like one of those things that's like a natural skill set or not. But since we're talking superpowers and patting ourselves on the back, I am very good at getting out the door on time, pretty much no matter the circumstances. Like, I can make it happen. My house doesn't always look good when we walk out the door, but I can
right.
get us out the door on time. And I think that goes to my like linear detail. I have a detailed brain, but I'm very linear and chronological. So I'm really naturally good at like the things that need to happen in a row to make X happen. That's why I make a good
yeah.
project manager or like an editorial person, because I can see those steps. Now, I think that's a handicap in some other ways. I'm not always good at just like losing myself in an activity and being really present because I always have the clock going, okay, you know, in 10 minutes, we
right.
need to start getting shoes on. And so I think with any of these things, if you have a superpower, I think sometimes there's a weakness behind it and that's just the yeah. yin and the yang and that's okay. But that is another one of mine, is getting out the door on time.
That's interesting because I've become very good at getting out the door on time. I wouldn't say I always was.
Right.
And I think how I finally was able to maybe isn't even the best way. Like, I am a super active manager when it comes to getting out. And I can get,
yeah.
the kids can all get up with like 10 minutes to spare and I will get them out the door.
Right.
But I will also stand there and like yeah. a drill sergeant
yeah.
and yell and clap yeah. my hands at them and stuff. Like, I'm just like, go, go, go. You know, like yeah. I don't, in the morning when I'm on my feet, I'm on my feet. I
yeah.
don't sit, you know, I am just going, going, going. And so I've learned to use whatever amount of time is available
right.
To be really efficient to get everyone out the door. That said, I don't really have, I'm not really good, like you said, at knowing what has to be done and then, you know, working backward from the goal.
Right.
If it was something outside of what I do every single day, I'd be much less successful.
Right.
So like when we are going on a vacation, say, I'm going to estimate we're going to leave the house at 10. but we're not going to leave till 11 because I forgot how long it's going to take to get everyone showered, get everyone dressed, pack up all the clothes, because that's not part of my daily routine. Like I'm not as able to efficiently judge
how long something might take. Because there's more unknown.
And it's interesting that John and I are the opposite. Like if he has to get out the door for a special thing, he's really good at making it happen. Like if it's something he has to think about really hard and there's details that he has to kind of manage, he's really good at that. But he's way more likely on just a regular day to have the kids be late because he just gets too comfortable or something. I don't know what it is. Like he just he just doesn't – he's not standing there like barking orders the way I am. And like I'm physically shoving stuff in backpacks and he wants the kids to do it for themselves. And so, you know, it just takes longer for that. But I don't know. It's interesting.
That is interesting. I feel like lateness or – punctuality is it's kind of like being a morning person or a night person. You can make shifts to your natural inborn tendencies, but there are just some people I know in my life who shall remain nameless who are just, you know, like we all know the chronically super late people and the chronically 15 minutes late people and the chronically on time people and the chronically early people. And I kind of think it's fun because I think there's really some pretty hardwired tendencies.
Oh yeah. Well, and I think for me, like I would, of course, I would have called myself a chronically late person up until recently. And I think honestly, for me, having so much of what I do happen in my own home has completely, now I'm very punctual, you know, I mean, there's, you know, if it's not something that's super important, I have to start it exactly this time, maybe not. But if it's a meeting or something I have to do, I'm great at being really on time. But what I'm not good at is estimating. I always underestimate how long something's going to – like getting in the car. I underestimate that's going to take 5 minutes, getting everyone buckled in, da-da-da. So I think, oh, we leave it 10 till, we'll be great. And instead, we really need to leave it quarter till or whatever it is, you know. So I push it to the last minute. And in some situations, that works really well. And in some, it means I'm always that person who's like 2 minutes late.
Right.
So, you know, I've gotten better. And I've got a really good internal clock. But it's just I don't always – I'm not a good judge of how long things will take. And because of the efficiency thing, I don't like to leave too early either. I don't like being super early. I like to be like right on time.
Yeah.
So, that's so fun. Sometimes that means I misjudge a little bit on either side. So
that's so funny. Yeah. I love it. All right. Well, I have one more kryptonite for me. And that is, this is going to go back to the episode we did about clutter and stuff, junk and things a while ago.
Yeah.
But it's not just clutter because that I think is too general. My real kryptonite, you'll laugh at this. I think it's really me, is miscellany. I do not like piles of stuff that each really belongs somewhere, but it's not quite clear where. And so it accumulates in a miscellaneous pile. And miscellany, I think, can be like literal miscellany, like a pile on the counter, or just general stuff in the house that seems to like never quite find its way back. Because what's interesting is I actually have a decent tolerance for my house being toys on the floor and not super clean. I've just learned. So it's not that I need everything in its place all the time, but there's like certain types of objects or papers or things that feel like it's always in a jumble. And it's, to me, it's the miscellaneous factor or like the too many things in one category all shoved into one bin that seriously makes me like a little bit cray cray. And the funny part about this is that my darling third child, like her favorite way to play is to go around. She loves packing up bags. So she'll go around, she'll grab like a, you know, a reusable like grocery bag or like an old purse, and she'll go around the house and start putting miscellany from it might be one of my shoes and a hairbrush and some doll things and some Legos and like a Tupperware from the kitchen and a granola bar all in the same bag. And then I'll find that bag somewhere. And all my mind can see is how long or how annoying it would be.
It's going to take to put all those things
away. Now, I think we can all relate to this, but it's a true kryptonite for me. It's like the kind of thing that just brings me to my knees sometimes where I'm like, not the miscellaneous jumble. And yet for Violet, it's like, that she's like a professional collector of miscellany.
Just whatever.
So
that's so funny because I think for me, I don't mind piles as long as they look neat. And the things that I don't like, we've talked about before, like my, you know, house triggers are things on the floor because they don't look neat. They're not supposed to be there. Right. You know, like blankets or pillows on the floor.
I know that's a
I can't ignore that. It's on, it's not supposed to be there. So get that up off the floor. But like a, you know, I'm at my desk right now and I'm looking at, I have these two piles next to my computer and they're both sort of my miscellaneous piles. Like they're my, I think of them as like my pending file.
Yeah.
They're things I'm going to deal with at some point and I just haven't got around to it yet.
Right.
But they're nicely, neatly stacked. And so, yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Clara used to do the same. Like she would have lots of, she had like lots of little canvas tote bags when she was about Violet's age and she would fill them with just random junk. And I would just fish out the perishables.
Yeah.
You know, like if there was food in there, fish those out and tell her to go put them in a room. And I swear if I go up into her closet, you know, right now, I bet I would find tote bags still filled with miscellany that she probably put there when she was like 4 years old. And I just never got around to putting back. She has toy boxes in her room and they're all miscellany. And that probably, you know, I mean, I probably need to go through those now and who, you know, who knows what treasure of toys that she's not even playing with because there's
just I feel like your response like is a healthier, more normal. Like, I think I just have an unhealthy attachment to like things being in the right categories because I have such a categorical brain. But Brian is the same way. I know I've said this on this show, but he's so sweet and he'll tidy up. He's he really helps pick up toys. But his idea, like we have a big kitchen island. So we have a lot of counter space in the island and then also a little side where my desk is. And he will do exactly like you'll say. He'll just straighten the piles. I'm more likely, and he'll like make them all neat. And then he'll stack a bunch of stuff right on top. And I'm like, but you don't understand. There's like a deck of cards and a sock and a, it's like the most random pile. And he'll just make it look really neat. And then he'll wipe the counter around it and like, you know, like clap his hands and he'll be done. I'm like, but you don't understand. All that stuff is like,
done.
It just goes in so many different places. But I think your the way you deal with miscellany is a much healthier and more normal than mine. So that's why it's a kryptonite for me is it's not, it's unavoidable. Like miscellany is a part of life, especially with toys and piles. But it's more than just general clutter. Cause I think clutter is like a bigger category. It's the one that just makes me feel like super frustrated. So,
well, and you know, the thing is I think for me, I'm just able to suspend like my desire for what I know is coming. You know what I'm saying? So like we have friends who don't have kids. And when I go to their places, I'm so amazed. Everything is just in its place and they don't have extra of anything. So like, you know, a good friend of ours, single woman, she's got like just enough utensils.
Right.
Just enough cups. Yeah. Just they all match. I mean, everything looks like it's supposed to look. And I think, well, okay. I mean, it won't be that long before that'll be our lives too, right? Yeah. I mean, if we can actually, you know, once our kids move out, if we actually go through the hassle of eliminating some of the stuff we don't need anymore and if we're able to do that emotionally and who knows? I mean, who knows how I'll feel in 12 years or whatever.
Right.
But like that'll happen. I mean, you know, 40 years of my life will have gone by first where it won't happen, but it's just, it'll come. And one day we'll have those lives where, and those homes where everything is neat and in its place. And I like that too. It's just not a big deal to me.
Right. Well, I think it's kind of almost like we're coming back to where we started, which is it really is a natural superpower of yours to be comfortable and calm in chaos. And it is not, because miscellany is sort of like clutter chaos, really. I mean,
it is.
Pillows. It's sort of a different version of it, but, yeah.
Cool, so I have one more superpower. And this is something I guess I just really didn't think about myself until pretty recently. And it is, and I'm not even really sure how to define it, but something where like, I don't get really anxious about things, that put my kids' lives in peril. And this sounds terrible. But, you know, now that I've, you know, my son Isaac is going through driver's ed, and so we're driving around a lot. Uh-huh. And one day I just realized, I mean, I'm so calm. Like, I'm just sitting there in the front seat, and he's terrible. He's just making a lot of really dumb mistakes. And, you know, he'll be going like 20 miles an hour when he's supposed to be going 40, and then suddenly he starts going way too fast, or he'll take a corner way too fast. And, I mean, I know that his life and my life are actually kind of in his very incapable hands right now. Right. But I'm just not really that worried about it and stuff like that. You know, those kinds of things never really made me very anxious when they were little either. You know, I think I was kind of always able to distance myself a little bit from reality when they were learning a skill that where they might get hurt.
Yeah.
And so I was never the mom who hovered at the playground or who worried about, you know, I'm not completely laissez-faire and to the point of being unsafe. It's just, right. I guess I just recognize those things as part of life and sort of the risk we take being alive, you know?
And I think that's something that a lot of people will envy or wish they had. I'm thinking the example that just came up for me recently is that like Reed goes on field trips like every month. They have a lot of field trips.
Yeah.
And a couple of them are on a bus. And there were parents who, now, I mean, most kids take a bus to school anyway, but we don't. And they're only in kindergarten, so they're little. But I had no problem, I mean, with the fact that the field trip was on a bus. I actually feel safer on a bus in a lot of ways than than another parent chaperone driving. But that's another issue. Yeah. But there were many, I mean, many parents whose kids either didn't go or whose kids went and they were terrified of the kids getting on a chartered school bus type thing to go on a field trip. And that one, and same, we've talked about in our, I think, school and episodes about how I do the drive-through line. And there are a lot of parents who want to be there right when the kid exits the gate, just in case. So I would say I'm kind of similar in some of those types of worries about like what could possibly happen. Worries, you know, where I'm not like that though, is another kind of kryptonite one for me is sickness. I do not do well when my kids are sick. I either get anxious and worried that it's going to get way worse, or it's like throws off my, you know, ability to be in control and have a routine. And then that's a different issue. Yeah. So I would say I'm the same as you when it comes to like that kind of danger, driving and car accidents and, you know, those types of things, but less so about health. I tend to be more anxious about health issues.
I'm not.
No, I think that's great. But
it's just funny to me, like that the things, I mean, I guess what I'm kind of pulling from this is when it comes to things like physical dangers, not really a problem for me, but something where I have to physically do something in a patient way, a problem for me. I mean, it's just interesting. Maybe it's because I'm just a little more passive physically. I'm like more physically just passive. I mean, I'm not really the person who's, I'm just kind of thinking. I'm not really the person who's, or thinking and feeling, but I'm not really the person who's then taking action a lot. Right. And I've been that way since I was a little kid. So, I mean, I'm sure it all comes from who we are.
Yeah.
And, you know, our upbringing, like you said, your parents model, or your, you know, people around you modeling certain ways of being. And my mom was very no-nonsense about things, like very no-nonsense. And I can't imagine a time when she would have sat and talked to me about my feelings. That just wasn't, I had a lot of them. I had a lot of feelings, but I just kind of dealt with them on my own and whatever. I mean, I just wasn't, that wasn't the kind of upbringing I had. So it'd be interesting if there would ever be any way to know. And I guess this is what psychologists are still trying to figure out, is how much of this is just who we are and how much of it is what we grew up around.
Well, and I do think,
and how we've adapted as adults.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say, is it is interesting to think about the things we were really naturally good at or loved doing or felt really like easy and natural doing before kids, and then how those same skill sets apply with kids. And then same thing on the flip side. Because we're talking about it, how it relates to parenthood, but there's probably through lines from the beginning of things that we're well suited for. And I always, like, one of my best friends growing up had kids at the same time and is very opposite from me in a lot of ways. But we had our first babies at the same time and we were in different states. But I remember saying at the time, like, having a baby forced her to like have a little bit more structure and think a little bit more in details and plans and all of that. And it forced me to let go a little bit, you know, to like realize I wasn't in control. And we did it at the same time. And, you know, our superpowers and our kryptonites came out probably in opposite ways, but they were still there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have to make a note that when I first originally was thinking about this show, I kind of thought we would talk about all of our superpowers up front and then switch to kryptonite and it would be about even. But I think we're about 75% kryptonite. Which is fine. Then it's all interwoven, right? It's all, because it is like a flip side. Like, you know,
actually, when I was thinking about it just in my head, planning, I spent all my time thinking about my superpowers. Then I'm like, wait a second, I'm not all powerful. But I think it was because, that again, we're all pretty good at piling on ourselves about what we're
bad at. Yes, good at. I totally agree.
Funny. Well, so listeners, we want to hear from your superpowers and your kryptonite, and if you match up or are totally opposite from us in any ways. I think I'll throw up this question on Facebook when the show runs, and see if we can get a discussion going there, because I think it's a fun one.
Yeah, it would be really fun. At some point, I would really love to get where we can capture audio again from people.
Yes.
And, you know, incorporate into the show in some way. Maybe we'll work on that, because that would be really fun, like, you know, for people to talk about that stuff. We can all relate. We all have our
superpowers. And I know sometimes when people listen, they're like nodding along or arguing with us in their car on their headset.
Yes, if you're shaking your fist at us.
Yeah, shaking your fist. Before we wrap, we didn't do our segment, so I'm going to do it right now.
I thought about that.
What's happening in your house this week? What are you up to? We're recording this before Easter, but it'll air after Easter. So what's going on with you guys?
Okay, well, you go first. I have to think about that.
I am seeing the Book of Mormon musical on Easter Sunday, which I'm
super... Oh, that's super, right. You texted me about that and I forgot to respond.
Super excited
about. But I laughed.
So by the time this show runs, I will have seen it. I've been listening to the soundtrack. And I just haven't seen like a big, you know, touring Broadway production of anything in quite a while, in a few years. So but that's obviously been on my list. And Easter Sunday just feels somehow like horribly perfect. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. So mine is also sort of theatrically inclined. I'm now knee deep in rehearsals for the play that I'm in, which is called Next to Normal. Did we talk about this last week?
You just mentioned it when we were talking about getting back into our hobbies. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So it's going to be a very challenging play. It's kind of a dark, not dark. Yeah, it's dark. It's heavy. And I'm going to have to act.
And like, in your honesty, it's like an ensemble intensely. Cast, right? So you're like in it the whole time.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So it's great. I'm very excited. So I'm into that right now. And so, you know, John's been really taking over a lot of the household stuff. And luckily we're getting into that, you know, the kids have a 3-day weekend, and then next week the week after is spring break. And I'm looking forward to not having to worry about homework for a little while, which I think is going to be the opposite, maybe the topic of our next show.
Yes. We are going to talk about homework.
Yeah. So, I'd like to expand on that and talk about academic expectations and all that stuff, which all kind of wraps in.
Absolutely.
So, So that's where we are. I mean, we're just kind of like right now we're going into sort of like a month, like an intense month where our roles are flopping a little bit. And so there's a little
bit of friction. Does your show open in May?
It opens in May. Yep. Okay. It'll run for 3 weekends in May. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. All right. Well,
I guess that's a wrap.
Yeah. And so for anybody who wants to find, we did talk about a couple posts that we'll share and a few things. So all of that will be at themomhour.com. Just look for episode 44. And you can leave a comment there, or you can email hello@themomhour.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. So find us and interact with us, and we continue to appreciate all the comments and the emails, and the iTunes reviews are great. So thank you guys for listening.
See you next time.